Every kid, you dream about your debut, and it couldn't have been more perfect for me.
Wild card game versus the Rockies, bottom of the seventh, you're up to bat, you've only been at the plate four times all year. What's going through your head?
In that pressure situation, anything can happen. I would have bet every dollar in the world that I was going to swing at that first pitch. Yeah. That triple will forever be one of the greatest moments in Diamondbacks history.
Baseball is back.
Perdomo makes the play.
And a high fly ball, no doubt about this, home run Marte.
They're going to send the ball all the way around. Back.
It's Alec Thomas from the Diamondbacks.
Former Major League Baseball player Luis Gonzalez.
I'm Torrey Lovello, and you're listening to the T-Backs Podcast.
T-Backs Podcast.
T-Backs Podcast.
Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the T-Backs Podcast, where we are always proud to be Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast, and indeed only baseball and beverage podcast. We are not in our usual setup in across the pond over in London today. We are 5,000 miles away. We're back in Arizona finally for spring training. But we are here with one very important mission, and that is to find out the number one cult hero in Diamondbacks history. We polled all of you guys over on the Diamondbacks Reddit to find out who you think should be honored with that amazing title. And there was one name that came up above everyone else, and that is the gentleman sitting across from me. Welcome to the show, Archie Bradley.
Wow, what an honor, man.
Thank you. Super nice to meet you. Yeah, it's great to have you here. How does that title, number one cult hero Diamondbacks history, according to Diamondbacks subredditors, rank among your career achievements?
Man, I'm going to put my foot... It's in the top five or top ten. Obviously... What this place means to me, the fans, the people, to be voted a cult hero is something I'm going to wear at the badge of honor. And I kind of, we talked about it off, it was a cult moment. You know, that triple, speaking on it myself, is going to go down and will forever be one of the greatest moments in Diamondbacks history.
Oh, not humble about it at all.
Look, I am definitely humble about it. It's just I literally watched it again today. It's not like I watch it every day. Maybe I do. But it popped up and something sent me today. And what I love about it is the stories I hear from other people about it. Kids that were 10 that are now 20. Yeah. Kids that were in elementary school now at ASU. And just what it means to them and how it has... It started their fandom. It started their fan experience and started their love for the Diamondbacks. And that's why I say it with so much pride, is because of what it means to the younger fans and what it sparked in them to become Diamondbacks fans.
That's really cool. We're going to get into a little bit more of your career, but we were chatting before the cameras got rolling. Archie over here is a big fan of cricket. Where did that come from?
Man, again, Archie's Adventures, that's kind of what I like to call my life.
That's a show.
Yeah, it is. That's kind of the YouTube series I'm running now. Yeah. But it started then, 20 years old. I was fortunate enough, the Diamondbacks selected me to go over and be a part of a trip to Sydney, Australia, where we played Team Australia and the Los Angeles Dodgers to open the season in 2014, I think is what I said. Yeah. So I got to pitch against Team Australia. I gave up a homer over in Australia, so I've given up a homer in a foreign country as well. But we played in the world-famous and historic Sydney Cricket Grounds. Mm-hmm. And so not only did they renovate that and turn that into a professional baseball field, but we got to learn the history of cricket, the etiquette, the value, and the traditions that have lasted, I think, longer than baseball, if we go back to it. And so, again, I'm not the biggest cricket fan, but it gave me such a newfound respect and understanding for something that means so much to the world.
Yeah, that's really cool. I don't think there's too many other pitchers who have given up home runs in foreign country. I think now with baseball going to London, going to Tokyo, going to Mexico.
Guys playing winter ball, you know, there's a lot.
But in a regular season game, I don't think.
Yeah, before I gave up a homer in the big leagues, I gave up a homer in Australia. Pretty cool.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty cool. If you're going to give up a homer anywhere,
you know,
do something interesting.
It's funny to say giving up a homer is cool. In my playing days, I would never say that. But now when you're done, you realize it's kind of cool, especially when you give up homers to some guys and it didn't mean you lost. But it's like, oh, that's pretty cool. So-and-so hit a homer off me.
Well, that's cool. Well, let's start at the start then in terms of you've given up a homer before you've given up somewhere else. Let's go to that first game then. We're going to go Diamondbacks debut versus Clayton Kershaw.
Wow.
You're sitting there, rookie pitcher. At what point do you hear that's who you're facing, and then how do you go into a matchup like that?
I knew I was gonna get him early, because if I remember the season correctly, I was the fifth starter, and the way it lined up with off days, we opened up against the Giants, or I'm sorry, we opened up against the Dodgers. maybe I can't remember what it was, but Kershaw was making his second start of the season already. Yeah. I was making my first start. They had an off day, and they chose to bump Kershaw up to make another start. And I just remember every kid, obviously you want to have a career, but you dream about your debut. And it couldn't have been more perfect for me. Saturday night.
It was a really good game
I mean,
well.
Saturday night in Arizona, the black uniforms, which was my favorite uniforms.
They're so tight.
They're so good. Sold out crowd against the Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw coming off his MVP season. Triple crown, I think, that year across the league as a pitcher. The best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
And one of the best lineups in baseball. Jimmy Rollins is my first batter I'm going to face, which backstory, we can find this, I think, through Twitter. 2011, I got drafted. Jimmy Rollins tweeted that day, "Good luck to everyone that gets drafted. Best day of your life. Hope to see you guys in the big leagues one day."
Yeah.
I tweeted Jimmy back, "Hey, Jimmy, I just got drafted in the first round." Something super stupid.
I'm fanboying a bit. Yeah,
yeah, and he actually tweeted me back, like, "Hey, good luck. Hope to see you one day." My first at bat, my first out in the big leagues was Jimmy Rollins.
That's so cool.
So I threw strike one, strike two, and I remember strike three. I to my knowledge, I paint the third pitch I throw in the big league, strike three. I strike, and I start to walk. Not so fast starts, ball.
Yeah.
Haven't earned that yet. So I end up going full count.
No head taps either.
No head taps yet, which we'll talk about that. I love that. But yeah, then I end up striking out Adrian Gonzalez for my first strikeout. And then I think you have to look this up. I then come up in the second inning, two outs, and I get the green light to swing first pitch. And I get a hit, my first pitch in the big leagues off Clayton Kershaw.
I think we're setting a bit of a trend.
So, yeah, just crazy start. I remember getting to first base, and again, this is a story I'll retell a bunch. Adrian Gonzalez, my first strikeout, I get to first, and he goes, "Hey, bro, I would retire if I were you." I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, "Bro, you just got Jimmy Rollins out, you just struck me out, and you just got a hit off Clayton Kershaw
it's
to start.
It's all downhill
from here." He's like, "There's nothing else you can do that is going to top this." So I got a lead. He threw the first pitch. And Dave McKay and Adrian both joking, like, "Hey, get a bigger lead. There's two outs. Clayton's not going to pick over. You know, you're the pitcher." So I get a much bigger lead, and Adrian is still like, "Dude, seriously, go in, and I would just tell your coach you're done, retire."
Yeah.
In the middle of that conversation, Clayton Kershaw picks over, and I get picked off. So I have to be one of the only big leaguers to get a hit and then get picked off in their debut.
But, yeah, you mentioned you're in an organization where pitching depth is really strong. Zach Greinke, Patrick Corbin, Robbie Ray. What's your mentality like to be rubbing shoulders in the clubhouse with those guys every day and think, am I better than them? Do you have to bet on yourself straight away? Or are you thinking of this more as like, I'm a learning experience. I can learn from these guys and then I'll take this.
I would say a little bit of both. I mean, I'll even say some more names. Shelby Miller, RIP Tyler Skaggs coming up, Jared Parker, Charles Brewer, Cole Mentor. I mean, there was, you know, Bronson Arroyo in my early days. There was a huge mix of young prospects, older veteran guys, Ian Kennedy. And so it was a mix of both. I think young Arch was so eager to get to the big leagues. I didn't care much about learning. I thought I was good enough. I thought my fastball was good enough. My curveball was good enough. And so as much as it was, about becoming friends and learning, I mean, I was trying to get to the big leagues. I thought I was good enough to be there at 19, to be honest. And so, it was fun to learn, but I was more about trying to get there than learn at that time.
And then, it seemed like you were good enough for a hot minute there on your
debut. And I didn't even get to finish. To wrap up my debut, I ended up going six innings.
Yeah.
I give up one hit, four walks, six strikeouts, no runs, and I get a win against Kershaw and the Dodgers in my debut.
And it's not like you've got that burned into your memory, just listing it off every dinner party,
I bet most guys, you'd be surprised. I talked to one of the top guys for the Padres. He brought up an outing of mine from high school. And I just think baseball guys, sports guys, I mean, you could bring up stuff that you wouldn't believe you could remember. But he was talking about a start in my high school senior year where I only pitched three innings and I struck out nine guys. And he was like, "Yeah, I remember it. It was great because you threw under 40 pitches." And I was like, "That was 15 years ago, and that was a high school game. You've watched 15 years of big league games, other prospects, and you remember a high school outing of mine." So for me to remember my debut, it's like yesterday for me.
And then moving on, one point in 2017, it's reported despite a starting spot being available, you were in the bullpen at that point, and you opted to stay in the bullpen. Was that a you choice? Was that a you and the manager
choice?
It's
again, this is where, as a player, as a man, woman in life, respect the word and the meaning of it and the value of it and showing it. The Diamondbacks, Torrey, Mike Hazen, the whole organization showed Archie Bradley what respect is.
Yeah.
I was rolling. I mean, I was throwing the seventh, eighth inning.
Yeah. Statistically, the best reliever in baseball in both ERA plus and BWAR at that time.
I mean, it was. I had learned to pitch in the big leagues that spring, that offseason. I had a great offseason. I had chosen to move out here, work out at the facility with Goldie, Chris Owings, Pollock, these guys that were, I mean, Goldie, AJ, they were all stars. Like, so why would I not work out with those guys? I rededicated myself and I found something that spring, and they told me, you're going to the bullpen, but you're good enough to be in the rotation. And then, so the moment you're talking about, they brought me in, they're like, hey, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
Do you want to go into this rotation or do you want to stay in the bullpen? And I just remember being like, God, what a predicament. In my head.
Maybe not that common that you'll get given that choice as well.
No, but I was throwing so good, man. Yeah. Like, I was throwing so hard and I learned how to pitch. I was throwing strikes. I wasn't walking guys. I knew how to pitch to guys that didn't strike out. Joe Panik, I finally understood that you get him to hit ground balls. You don't try to strike Joe Panik out. And so I just remember there thinking like, man, I've always wanted to be a top of the line arm, which I think I am.
Yeah.
But I'm also doing it in a role I never saw myself. I never in 100 years thought I'd go to the bullpen. And here I am thriving in it, and I love it. Like, the way Torrey was using me, coming in the sixth, getting to the eighth, coming in the seventh, pitching 7, 8, 9. Like, you know, there were so many things I'd never done, and I felt like I just had such a better chance to impact the outcome of a game than if I was just starting once every 5 days. And so I remember being like, guys, like you just said, I think I'm the best reliever in baseball. I can't take myself out of this position, so let's roll with it.
Yeah, it's really cool that you like can have that feeling that actually the best thing for the team is also the best thing
for
you.
Well, I mean, that's, again, players, hear me out on this. I want you all to be selfish and go make as much money as you can, but when you believe in winning and you know that your team has a chance to win and you get to make decisions that impact winning, it's the coolest thing you can do in your career.
Well, speaking of winning, 2017, we got to the moment a lot of our fan poll remembers you for. Wild card game versus the Rockies, bottom of the seventh, men on first and second. You're up to bat. You've only been at the plate 4 times all year, apparently.
Yep.
What's going through your head?
Don't strike out. Obviously, I can sit there and be like, man, I'm going to get a hit. I'm going to hit a homer. I just remember about a month left in the season, Torrey comes up. He goes, hey, start taking batting practice again.
Yeah.
We need you to cover innings, and your spot in the lineup's going to come up, especially in the playoffs. We need you to be able to feel comfortable, and you never know, be ready.
Yeah.
So the week before, clip it, San Diego, I get in a bat, same situation. First pitch I see, I hit a freaking line drive up the middle.
Yeah.
Margot comes in, it one hops him. I end up on third, clapping, pointing into the dugout, Goldie, all the guys on the top step, and then fast forward a week later, same situation.
So you've got that in your brain, like, I've done this already.
Yeah, I've done it, man. I just ripped a ball up the middle. I had only 4 bats, but I always claimed to be a good hitter. Go look at my high school stats. I hit some high school homers.
Sure.
But I just remember going up to bat, Torrey gives me green light. I would have bet every dollar in the world, everything I ever had, I was going to swing at that first pitch.
Yeah.
Pat Neshek, all-star that year, ball one, I spit on a slider inside. Ball two, spit on a slider. I'm up 2-0, obviously get the green light. I'll fast forward, I get the 2-2. I just remember thinking, do not strike out. Yeah. Even if you just ground out, like, make them have to make a play. Because you never know, man. I don't care. Grown men, little boys, in that pressure situation, anything can happen. So just put the ball in play. And sorry, I get excited, man.
Oh, go for it. I'm here for it. I'm here for the energy.
I see it like slow motion, man. Pat Neshek, the way he would, like, come set, he did his little pat, kind of like Jason Mott, and he threw this, like, slide arm, mid, you know, three-quarter delivery. And I remember starting to swing because I wanted to be ready. And I start my swing, and you can see it. I see the spin and that it's a slider. And I just remember dropping this back knee to try to stay back as long as I could to give myself a chance to hit it. And I didn't think it was a homer, but every player talks about this. I didn't feel it off the bat.
Yeah.
I remember hitting it in the perfect spot. And I remember seeing the trajectory of it. The outfielders, Blackman, I think Parra was in left. They had come in a little bit, obviously so. I just not only hit it in the perfect spot, but I would hit it over their heads regardless. So, yeah, I remember seeing this ball go in left field, man, and just blacking out. I say this, I wish I'd have stopped at second. That's not true.
No.
I remember it was no doubt in my head. I was going to third. I slide in. I pop up. And then, yeah, you see the replay. Look in the dugout. I yell. My parents are sitting eye level. I point. I'm pointing right there at my dad. And then that became a bobblehead.
Yeah.
And it's just.
Is that like the top accolade of your career? Like, you're a bobblehead?
Yeah, it's up there. I always go back to my debut, and there's a few games and runs we went on as a team. But, I mean, as an individual, as a pitcher, again, you could count. Shohei doesn't count. I'm the only relief pitcher in baseball history to hit a triple in the playoffs.
Yep.
Joe Blanton hit a homer. Mm-hmm. There's a few other guys that have done hit doubles, hit homers, but no one in the history of the game as a relief pitcher has hit a triple in the playoffs, except for Archie Bradley.
I find that really fascinating that you, as like a guy, amazing quality of pitching at times throughout your career, but you're remembered for hitting.
Yeah,
in like the pre-DH era, like I can't imagine Kevin Ginkle going out and doing that now. I'd love to see
it. Love you, Ginks, but probably not.
I've met you before. We seemed chill. This is not a slander on you. I can't see you doing it. But before the DH, is that a thing that like you felt like you could go in and do that all the time, or was that something you...
No, not all the time. I'm happy the DH is in both leagues. I love the National League. I love the strategy, the double switching, and like you can win games by being smarter than the other manager and by doing things the right way. But quality of game, at bats, the thing, that whole season, again, moving to the bullpen, a couple weeks in, I'm throwing late innings, I'm getting saves, I'm getting holds, I'm on t-shirts, people are wearing fake beards. I have an entrance song. I have flames, just everything. And then to roll into making the playoffs after being the second or third worst team in baseball the year before, almost losing 100 games, to I think outside the NOS, we would have won any division in baseball that year.
Yeah.
Except our own. We had the second best record in the league or third best record in the league. So for all that to happen, to have the turnaround, to be the face of the team, the voice of the team. And then, I think what I look at most is you look at the dugout, the reaction of my teammates.
Yeah.
It says everything about what that team meant to me, what friendship we have, what teamship, what the brotherhood, man. It was just everything. And for me, again, I talk about this a lot. It's what we revived in this state, in this city. Mm. We made people proud to be Diamondbacks fans. Mm. We beat the Dodgers 3 series in a row. We swept them 4 straight in LA. JD Martinez hit 4 homers. We brought in JD, just dingers. Like, it was my dream coming up that was coming true. I was a part of a team that was making a playoff run. Mm. I was a significant role, not only playing, but in leadership. Torrey loved me. I love Torrey. We love Torrey. Cattell came out of his thing. Descalso, John. I mean, just one of my favorite years of my life.
Yeah, I only became a Diamondbacks fan 2022. Yeah. I'd have loved to
go.
Have seen
just
that,
if you
man.
Can, go rewatch the 17th season, man.
Yeah.
You start opening day. We walked off the Giants on opening day. Just magic from the get go.
And then you mentioned you started throwing later innings a bit further forward in your career. You find yourself as like the nominated closer. It's a thing that Torrey in recent years has been kind of hesitant to name. So you must have been pretty good at it, all things considered, to be getting that formal thing. Is the approach or the mindset different if you're like the ninth guy as opposed to like coming in the sixth?
Yes and no. Again, that's where I was so fortunate. Mike Fetters, I think, one of the greatest bullpen coaches out there. And one of the reasons he did it for so long, but he taught me some intangible, crucial things about pitching in the bullpen and about pitching in the ninth inning. And Dan Heron.
Yeah.
Dan Heron's another just great baseball mind. Zach Greinke as well. I got to give credit where credit's due. And then my catchers, Avila, Jeff Mathis, Iannetta. Mm. I could go through. I don't want to leave anyone out. But there is a huge difference because, like, let's just say, for example, in the ninth, I'm coming in to close a game versus other times. Mm. But if I have anything more than a one-run lead, I give up a homer. I don't care. Like, I am going in so aggressive. Mm. I'm not trying to put runners on base. I'm not trying to have a runner on first. I'm not trying to, like, give up
that's a ballsy style of pitching.
Give up a solo shot. Yeah. Like, that is the best thing that could happen outside of a guy hit a double. Because now a guy's on base, the game can be tied. But it's understanding situations and then also swallowing your pride and understanding where you have to sometimes give up runs or do something outside of get a strikeout. And then as analytics got in, it really became even more clear. This is something that I say very hesitantly because I don't ever want to take the power out of a catcher or pitcher. Mm. But as we got into analytics and numbers, how great is it to know that in a 1-2 count, 72% of the time, Arenado sings at a slider down and away. Okay, tell me to throw a slider down and away now. Yeah. Now I have the best percentage pitch to throw and the conviction behind it. Let's go make the best educated and precise pitch to get this guy out.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to hear you talk about like your style. Like, I'm just gonna go in and I don't care. I'm
well,
go
early
and then
I
also
blew,
work in stats.
I blew
too.
Some saves, not a lot, but I blew some saves. Or even in my setup days, I blew some games where I didn't quite understand that. Mm. I tried to, I can't give up a run here, and it's like, well, that run I just gave up got me my second out, and now I get the third out, and we're only up one now, but I didn't blow the lead.
Yeah,
where instead of take, you know, I'm so cautious about giving up that run, I make whatever, I make a mistake, and now I give up a double, and I give up two runs, and I blew the lead. Where it's like, man, if I'd have just understood the situation and like what I was trying to do there a little bit better. And again, at those times, National League, double switching, understanding, okay, I'm not going to get this nine-hole hitter, I'm going to get Matt Kemp.
Yeah.
It's a tough name to bring up, but.
Yeah. You're really picking some out here. Pretty solid job of it, though. 28 saves in your time in the desert.
Yeah, and the cool thing about it, they were mostly all in 2019, which, again, if you can clip it, go look at my ERA at the All-Star break that year.
Yeah.
And it was like 6.57 to 6.58. The D-backs, again, that's what I love about them, called me in and said, hey, go home for the All-Star break. Don't pick up a baseball. Mm-hmm. Reset. But when you come back, you've got a short leash. When you're good, Arch, you're one of the best in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. Your numbers prove it. But we're trying to go win, and you're not helping us win. And again, like as a pro, that's where I love the Diamondbacks. They taught me what the business is about. And if you look at it, I was hurting the team. I couldn't even throw mop-up innings. I was getting hit so much. Mm-hmm. It was wild. And so what I am most proud about that season, those saves, I think I got 24 of them, 25 of them in that second half of the season. I led the big leagues in saves. I think I had the second lowest ERA in baseball in the second half. Yeah. And I took a 6.5 plus ERA to like a 3.57.
Yeah.
I think I gave up three or four runs in the second half. It was as dominant a run as I've ever been on in my career.
Yeah.
And in that moment, it was also the worst because we didn't make the playoffs that year. We had a good run. But, yeah, it was cool because, again, draft as a first-rounder, supposed to be a front-line starter, rotation guy, change, you know, not, but, yeah, you're kind of expected to be a front-line guy. Not really my fault in a sense. I never really got a chance to go back to the rotation. We kind of talked about that. But in another sense, I'm the closer for the Diamondbacks. Yeah. I am in a role that I've dreamed of that has huge weight. And I feel like I'm not only talented enough to do it, but mature enough to handle it when I don't get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, 13th in franchise history for saves, and that's
that's crazy.
Pretty good.
For only really, you know, I really only had, like, I bet if you look at my Diamondbacks career going into the COVID year, I probably only had 40 save opportunities, maybe 40. If I have 20, how many did you say I have? 28 as a Diamondback?
In the career of Diamondback.
Yeah, I probably only had 35, 36 save opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool.
So that's pretty cool.
That's a cool stat. So then you are traded away. Do you feel like your time in the desert was a success, or do you feel like you left a lot, like?
No, I mean, I say I left a lot on the table just because I wanted to stay here. Mm. I didn't want to leave. I would have given anything to grind, as crazy as it sounds, through those shitty years that they went through. That 21 season, that 22 season, and then the turnaround to go into 23 and make that miracle run and go to the World Series, and just heartbreak for everyone here. But yeah, it was tough, man. Again, I know the business, I know sports, I understand where the Diamondbacks were at, but it wasn't naive. I just loved this place so much. I wanted to be a Diamondback forever.
Yeah, and the connection there is very evident, which is what brings us on to the next little segment here. Little Archie Bradley is going in S tier.
Throw that up, man. That's S-tier. The first year of the beard.
Yeah, it's how we feel about that portrait. Is
I love
that
it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That sums you up nicely.
Yeah, that's great. That's 17 Arch, Under Armour, best year of my career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can take that home with you if you
I
want.
I probably will. Or I could sign it, you could give it to someone, you know.
Yeah. All right, we'll do that then.
I like that better.
We're going to get this given away to one of you listening to the podcast, so drop in the comments
Easy.
What's your favorite Archie Bradley moment, and we'll pick someone out of that. But let's get into that discussion. You're number one, but we're going to need your help to rank some other Diamondbacks kind of cult heroes that have been submitted here. We've polled them. Obviously, you were the most popular. The minted tier behind us, four tiers ranking Diamondbacks legends. We didn't want to go all the way down to F tier because that would feel somewhat disrespectful. We're going to lead it off. Going back to 2001, we have Tony Womack, staple of the World Series winning team, set up Gonzo's World Series winning run.
Yep.
We wouldn't have been in that World Series game if it wasn't for him in the game before against Milwaukee.
Was he at the ball down the line in that game, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. 2001 is his only year in Arizona with a WAR above 1.0. I think that's probably like the definition of a cult hero.
Yeah.
What do we think?
So do I have to rank these blindly? I don't get to see the other players?
Nope. You gotta pick a level.
Man, when you're a part of a World Series team and you have a World Series defining moment, especially something that pushes you to a game 7, I'm going to hold out because I think there may be someone that can top him, but we got to put him at a B.
Yeah.
I can't put him at C because when you put a ring on your finger and you bring a World Series to a new franchise, it's tough not to put him even above me.
It's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know what we would go to.
I mean, look, man, like, I love Archie, but winning the World Series, being a part of a World Series team, that's greater than anything I've ever done.
I love the reference to yourself in the third person. So Archie's great. Archie's good at baseball.
He's good, but Tony Womack, World Series champ. Archie Bradley, playoff hit. That's not the same.
Well, speaking of pitchers who rake, next up we have Micah Owings, arguably the founder of the Diamondbacks pitcher who rake club. So good of a batter, they considered him playing as a hitter even during his non-mound days. We can put them all in S if you need
But. I mean, have respect for all these guys. Micah Owings, again, doesn't get enough credit. If social media and the media the way it was around when he was doing some of the stuff he was doing, he would be a more remembered name, and I mean that respectfully to him. But I'd have to look at, he has over 10 career homers, right?
Yep.
I mean, I don't know how many other pitchers have that. I know Bumgarner, there maybe Zambrano, but there can't be many true pitchers that have 10 plus homers in their career.
No, I don't think
so. For that reason alone, he's I'm going to put him in the B squad.
All right, B squad it is. And for everybody coming at me in the comments of why they're in this order, this is the uniform order that I like, so don't be coming for me, okay? All right, next up, we got another relief guy. Another guy who bounced between closing, bouncing relief, bouncing starting. Got Byung-Hyun Kim, probably known for probably giving up those homers in New York and whatever, but I mean, I've talked about him a number of times on the show. But lights out elite for his time in the early 2000s, 70 saves across 6 years. What does that do for you?
You know, I think this is a little more personal for both of us, just knowing some prior knowledge. So for you and I both, he's going to go in the A squad.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Do you care to reference that or no?
I mean,
or explain?
I mean, BK is just one of my favorite like cult hero guys. He was somebody I've wanted to have on the show.
BK, come on, let's go, bro.
Yeah, when you're back in the desert, let's get everyone in the room.
And your lovely wife.
And my lovely wife, also named Kim, I have a Diamondbacks Kim jersey, and it's for this guy, not for her, so sorry, sweetie.
So that's another reason. You got to go in the A-squad for your lovely wife.
Oh, yes, of course. Rolling on, we've got Tyler Gilbert, probably the absolute definition of a Diamondbacks cult hero. Throws a no-hitter and then absolutely dips as distinctly average the rest of his career. That's A-tier?
I mean, a no-hitter? Again, no, I can't put him above a World Series. Let's put him in the B.
Yeah.
A no-hitter. Actually, sorry, Tyler. You're going to go to the C.
Yeah.
Again, this is where I struggle. A no-hitter, it's just...
I mean, still kicking around?
Major yeah, no, the good Sox for you. I love it. Keep trying. Keep at it, as you should. It's still in there, obviously. But yeah, that's for... It's in the. We're talking about cold heroes. It's a C. A no hitter. It'll live on forever. Yeah. I don't know if E-Jack.
It's C for cult hero.
I don't know if you got E-Jack in there as well. No. But E-Jack could go in that same squad. I think he had 8 walks in that no hitter.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tyler Gilbert, no hitter forever in Diamondbacks cult history. C for cult hero. That's what we got.
All right. Next up, we have the guy who caught that no hitter for Tyler Gilbert. We got Dalton Varsho coming up.
I've never wanted a player to get a hit so badly in my life than Dalton Varsho in Game 7 of the World Series. Yeah. We'll put him in the C squad as well.
Yeah.
For catcher, Colt Hero, catcher.
We can't break that.
Yeah, that's that a good. Can't break up that battery. I like that.
Oh, man. Like, such an amazing guy on my MLB The Show past and present team as well. He's so good.
I love that.
I love Dalton as a player. I mean,
Varsh. I watched him make his debut.
Mm-hmm. All right, another catcher next up, and I think this is where you were going to start getting to the Archie Bradley anecdotes. Miggy Montero.
Wow, Miggy. Is that already signed? Or is that just
No, this is just the image, sadly.
Miggy. I mean, maybe more of a cold hero for the Cubs, you know?
I mean, big moment.
Yeah, big moment, huge moment. But Miggy, again, I think we got to stick with the C. He was a fundamental piece of catching for the Diamondbacks for so long, especially here, the Latin community, what he does. Yeah. And, just a solid, solid career across so many teams. So he goes, we're going to stick to the C with the catcher.
Yeah, and there's a story that I pulled up when I was researching this. Drove you to your Cactus League game.
Miggy loves this. And I love it because, again, I was 19, first big league camp. I get Miggy is kind of taking me under his wing. And I knew he just bought a new Ferrari. I think he was an all-star.
I didn't know what car it was.
Yeah, I don't know the model of it, but it was a red Ferrari. I mean, young Arch with a couple million is like, ooh,
yeah.
I think I might want one of these. And so he said, hey, Rook, you'll ride with me tomorrow. I go, hey, Miggy, can we take the Ferrari?
I love that.
And Miggy drove me to one of my first spring training starts. We drove in his Ferrari to go make a spring start. That was pretty badass.
And was the conversation about the car, or were you talking baseball?
Both. Yeah. I wanted to drive it, and he actually, I think I threw really well that day, and he let me drive the Ferrari home. So that was cool.
And no scratches, no dings.
No, hell no. Was
no
I nervous?
Tickets?
No speeding. I mean, again, you know, you can't pull over Miggy in the red Ferrari.
Fast and Furious, Miggy Montero.
There I like
we go.
That.
All right, next up, we got Ryan Tapman Roberts. I think in part remembered for The Amazing Inc., but also amazing moment against the evil empire.
Yeah, again, Tapman, again, when you talk about cult heroes, I think he just belongs in the C category. The ultimate definition of cult, mm-hmm. The tattoos, Tapman, that moment against, obviously you brought it up. And I think from there, yeah, you know, just it's a perfect in line with kind of what guys represented out here with the guys he's in the category with there.
All right, we're running out of room in C to hit.
You know, again, there's... Even being mentioned in this is great. Being the C level doesn't...
Yeah, we got a long list of honorable mentions you haven't had to print up because I ran out of toner. Otherwise, we would have been here for ages. All right, next up, a name you mentioned earlier on in the show. We got Josh Colmenter, the Tomahawk delivery himself.
Yeah, he's going on the B.
He's going on the B.
Josh, for so many reasons. One, the Tomahawk. But Josh is a guy that doesn't get enough credit for what he did in his career here. Mm. Bouncing back and forth, people don't realize how tough that is to...
I mean, you're the insider here.
Yeah,
like, you can speak to
you
that.
Know, Josh, again, he was asked to start, he was asked to relieve, he went back and forth, mm-hmm. and then even, I think, going into that 2015 season, he was our opening day starter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Josh knows he's not a frontline guy. And I don't mean that in any disrespect.
Yeah,
Josh, you know that. Do you have front? Can you have some success? Yeah, just like me. But I'm not a frontline guy either. What I mean by that is Josh took that on his shoulders, and showed us how to be the guy.
Yeah.
And I just remember I learned the most from Josh was like, man, the guy didn't complain. He bounced back and forth. He did his job. And even when he struggled, he was the same funny guy. I mean, that's where I think I have a lot to give credit to Josh is like my personality. You don't let your performance dictate that. If you're a funny guy and you're a loud guy and you're energetic, you stay that way. You don't let playing bad stop you from being who you are. So thank you, Josh.
I mean, speaking of being who you are, the thing that came up most in Josh Commenter's mentions, once gave a theoretical physics lecture during spring training in the clubhouse. Were you a part of that?
I was a part of everything he did. That's part of the reason he's up there. He was much more than just a guy on the mound. He was a staple in the clubhouse for fun, freedom, information. And then ultimately, like, you know, I think he loved baseball.
So later down in the issue, Archie Bradley, theoretical physicist, all down to...
No, I'm not that smart. I'm street smart.
And all
I'm
right,
not book
street smart.
Smart.
Yeah. Okay. All right, moving on. We got the penultimate one here. We have one commenter who simply said, Tim LaCastro, hit by pitch. But one of the only guys on this list who has a display dedicated to them in Cooperstown for their stealing bases.
Yeah, record. I mean, when you have Cooperstown's displays, we gotta put in the B squad, man. The A squad is tough. I feel like I'm gonna get roasted for this because
you just keep an S tier for yourself. Is that what's going on here?
I didn't know I could put anyone else up there.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, let's move Tony up there.
All right.
Tony's got to go into the S because he's won a World Series.
Yeah, that's bad.
That's I can't.
All right.
I can't. Disrespect a World Series winner like that.
I'll raise my hands. I should have told you that it's not just dedicated to you.
That's fair. Timmy LaCastro, I think, belongs in the B squad. Mm-hmm. Again, for the time he was here, Timmy, again, I can say this, I feel comfortable, has the talent to be an everyday player, but has never been an everyday player in his career. But he came to the field every day with the fight and the will to earn an everyday spot and came every day to win. And again, you look at his career, he knew he was going to get hit. He knew he wasn't going to go in until later in the game. Yeah. And he was. Timmy LaCastro, hit by pitch. I don't know what the record is or what the display, but I know what the display
is. Cooperstown's is stealing bases, man.
Like, that's right. What
perfect.
Was it?
2021 to 2020, I think it is.
And that was that with us?
Yeah. Successful every stolen base attempt through 2020 and the start of 2021, breaking the record previously held by Tim Raines.
Tim Raines. And that was with the Diamondbacks, correct?
That was with the Diamondbacks.
That's, again, shows not only Tim's talent, but that you got to give a big shout out to Dave McKay.
Yeah.
Dave McKay is arguably one of the smartest men in baseball. He's been around longer than most teams. But Dave helped us pitchers on guys that were Steelers and how to combat the running game before all this other stuff. But even on me, he wrote a full page report on what I did when I came set. And I can break it down even further. I don't know if I stand up. Well, I don't have to stand up. But when I would come set, anytime I tapped my foot, like my lead foot, one, two, anytime I tapped it more than twice, I never picked off to first base. So he's like, Archie, I'd steal on you all day. You tap more than twice, I'm stealing, because I know you're not going to pick off. So I remember one of the first guys I picked off, I tapped three times, and then I picked over and I got him. That got me off track. But Tim LeCastro, hit by pitch, the steals, and just when you talk about a grinder, Tim LeCastro, grinder.
You ever pick him off in a practice game?
I don't know if I did or not. I definitely hit him. I know that much. I definitely hit him in an inner squad or in things like that. So I know he's been hit by an Archie Bradley fastball.
Places I don't want to be. All right, and last but most definitely,
I mean, just put him up there at the S.
All right.
Just, it's...
All right.
I mean...
Let's settle into the Jake Lamb and Archie Bradley stories section of the podcast.
Best friend, best man in my wedding, All-Star 2017. I think the first thing I'll highlight, Jake Lamb, I don't know if he has multiple. I know for sure he has one 30-homer season in the big leagues. Jake Lamb hit 3 homers his junior year at Washington.
Yeah.
Like, what? If that doesn't show you why baseball is the toughest game and why scouting and like first rounder, well, there's not full 50 rounds anymore. What is there, 20, 10?
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever it is.
Wallace Clark coming out of Great Britain for the Diamondbacks.
See, there we go. Shout out to the GB there, by the way. But Jake Lamb started in Visalia. We became teammates in high A and we rose through the minors together. He made his debut the season before me in 14. Mm-hmm. And then when I debuted in 15, I had bought a house and Jake moved in with me.
Yeah,
and that just was the cherry on top and started a run of 5 years together, 6 years. I mean, 6 seasons in the big leagues, Jake and I played side by side as a starter. He was at third base, then when I got moved to the pen, and then both of us going through injuries, setbacks, getting traded, getting released.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, that continued way beyond our playing days with the Diamondbacks. Like I said, we were both in each other's weddings. We both... still continually hang out together. Now Jake is working for the Diamondbacks. He's in the front office. I don't know what his official title is, but Jake is my best friend in the world. He is one of the greatest men that I know, one of the greatest teammates, and a guy that I not only had a lot of fun with, but if any players ever want to know the attitude and how to separate the game I kind of talked about from your personal life, Jake is a great example on caring about what matters on the field and then turning that off to care about what matters off the field.
Yeah, that's a really cool philosophy. We'll go through the honorable mentions list. We don't have printouts for everybody here. We have Seth Beer, Clay Zavada, Mike Fetters.
Oh, Fett should be on here. I love... There's the camera. The Fett stare. Clay Zavada, that's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, is one... I wanted to limit how long we'd be.
Of course, that's
two,
true.
Two, my printer ran out of tone when I was making.
And I
these.
Could talk. What I've learned is, I already said it. I say this joke. I love Arch.
Yeah.
But I could talk about other players and other guys' accomplishments far beyond what I did because it's so much more cool.
Yeah. We got Evan Longoria on there. More recent name.
Longo.
Gerardo Parra, Eduardo Escobar, another one. Jose Valverde, Mark Grace, Orlando Hudson, Devon White, who I know is a family icon amongst my wife's family.
Yeah.
We got a signed ball and a rookie card on there on our shelves at home. Steve Finley, I don't think you'd call him a cult hero. He's probably one of the top 10 all-time
Diamondbacks. I was going to say, he's probably, I think he's on the all Diamondbacks team.
All time, yeah.
The top 20, the 25-year anniversary team.
Yeah. Got Brian Anderson in there, Todd Stoddermeyer.
Todd.
2023 only Alec Thomas and Jay Bell.
Oh, I like those.
Yeah. Well, we'll wrap it up by having a quick conversation. As a former closer, the thing going on most in Diamondbacks spring training at the moment, Paul Sewald's back.
Yep.
We got Dre Jamison throwing heat. We got Mike Soroka. Is he bullpen? Is he starter? Where are you at in terms of what you're focusing on in Diamondbacks spring training?
What's
your opinions?
It's always pitching, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and again, I don't know if we've seen the MRI on Merrill's back. I don't know how serious it is, but... Yeah. Always, man. Spring.
We're recording this literally the day after we've been told it's going to further testing, guys. So okay, if Merrill Kelly is out for the season, we don't know that yet.
Yeah, we're literally, but again.
Knock on something.
Yeah, on I'm there with you, bro. Yeah. I don't know. This is wood. Spring is tough, man, because it's kind of three phases throughout your career that, like, some of the older guys that we're talking about, Merrill, Gallen, they're in. But you go from trying to just fit in and make the team and show up early. Then it's like, okay, I understand how to be a pro.
Yeah.
And then the later part, it's not that you do things differently, but spring is such a grind. Mm-hmm. And you have so much knowledge on what you need to do to get ready and just whatever, the toll of the season. But it's pitching. What is Merrill's health going to be?
Yeah.
Is Gallen going to have a bounce back year from, you know, the season before where he was plagued with some injuries?
Yeah.
Again, Sewald, Dre Jameson, I'm really excited to see what Dre does. I mean, yeah. that the whole deal with him was super weird.
Yeah.
I think his elbow's cleared up, and he's an electric arm.
Mm-hmm.
You bring in Fat, Soroka, again, same thing, had some injuries. What I'm hoping to see is like Sewald, mm-hmm. Soroka. I said it earlier about myself, but you get these flash in a pan moments from you. You get that star that season that you've mm-hmm. been hoping to have from these guys. I mean, those early Soroka days with the Braves.
Yeah.
Pitching, man, because I believe in this offense. We have three players in the top 10.
Yeah.
I think the drama with Marte is settled. I think he's poised to even do more than he's done.
Great day yesterday.
That's what I mean. And the excitement's there. I mean, that's I look at it from 17 on. I know those two couple years, but the pitching is going to be the thing because you look at these other teams in the division. You know, you can talk about the Rockies, but the Padres are stacked.
Yeah.
The Dodgers are the Dodgers. And then the Giants are really good, and their rotation is really good.
Yeah.
And so I think, like in years past, you could see three playoff teams come out of the NL West again.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be so cool to see. And I've got to say, thank you for the insight on this. Guys, it's time for you to get in the comments. What do you think of this? Has Archie done a good job here? I was originally going to have it like, we'll discuss this and we'll come something together. I thought, I'll take the heat off my own back.
Yeah,
I
can wear it. You know, this is the space I need to get into. There's never any shade. Even having a picture printed means you had such a substantial moment in Diamondbacks memories.
At least 20 votes of every guy on here. So
yeah.
I'm like, it's not a big subreddit either. So I'm going to say thank you again to the Diamondbacks subreddit for being the host to this contest and giving me an excuse to fly 5,000 miles to talk to one of my favorite Diamondbacks players.
Wow.
I don't get to do this very often.
It's pretty cool. I appreciate you, man. What a day.
Yeah, this is really cool. Thank you, man.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate it.
And the next one, maybe we'll come see you. Maybe we'll do some over where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Come over. No London series this year, sadly, but
and let's
Rob Manfred, London series.
Let's ask BK one more time. BK.
Yeah.
Let's help my man out here.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
Thank you so much for doing this. Guys, get in the comments. Did Archie do a good job? Remember to follow, like, subscribe, wherever it is you're listening or watching to the show. Next week, we're going to be in spring training camp with Great Britain Baseball, bringing you some behind the scenes, hopefully getting to talk to the one sole representative of Team Great Britain in Team Arizona Diamondbacks, meshing together, and other than just myself and the three fans listening at home. I'll say thank you very much for listening. As always, I've been Benji on the T-Vax podcast. I'm always proud to be Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast. We'll see you on the next one. Goodbye.